Hello,
Good morning.
welcome everybody.
Good
Hey,
morning.
Jim. Jim Bond is on. Hey, Jim.
Hi.
Thank
Hello.
you for being on here.
Jason. Yeah.
Well, thank you everybody for joining us in this subject
The
matter.
moon. Let's see.
Can everybody hear me?
Yeah, I might have to move. I think there's. I'm in California at my son's house, and something is a robot.
Okay.
Vacuum cleaner turned on. Okay.
We got it. Okay. So everybody can hear me now.
Yeah.
This is Pablos. Welcome. And I got Tyler here next to me. Tyler Gann, our new associate. Tyler is a graduate University of New Mexico, and we're glad to have him on board. So if anybody hasn't met him, Tyler has been a phenomenal addition to our team, and he'll be helping us in the future. So with us today, we have Kevin Hansen. He's our main speaker today. He's with the Principal Group. He's a certified financial planner, and he is going to give us a big overview on the Big Beautiful Bill. And of course, our trustee partner with Prudential, with me, Principal, Lev Wilson. And Lev, again, we appreciate your partnership and all the support that Principal supports and has partnership with Statera. So we appreciate Lev and his efforts. And we also have Teresa Seiss. She's a CPA with Seiss Accounting, and Jim Bond, CPA. Jim has been in the CPA business. Jim, can I say almost 50 years? Not quite, but approaching 50 years.
51 years.
51 years. How did I know that? So
Yeah.
we got two very astute accountants and CPAs with us, and they'll be answering questions about the Big Beautiful Bill. Whatever your feeling is about the Big Beautiful Bill, we're not making any political judgments. What we want to say is take advantage of what is given to you. We are in the business of tax avoidance or tax minimization. That's what we'll be talking about today. So if you don't like the Big Beautiful Bill, think of it as lemons. And so let's make some lemonade. So our job today is just to give you what the opportunities are before the end of the year. And we are willing to talk to any of you and have a separate meeting with any of you. Let us know. We are definitely setting up meetings for all of our clients before the end of the year so we do some tax planning strategies. You need to think about that before the end of the year. Kevin will talk about that. Now, let me hand over the baton to Lev Wilson, our Regional Vice President with Principal Group, and he'll introduce our key speaker today. Go ahead, Lev.
Thank you, Pavlos, and great to see everybody on the call today. I'm sure I've met a lot of you from the last couple events that Pavlos has done over the years, and I'm sure many of you are no stranger to Principal Asset Management. We're a global asset management company. We run the New Mexico 529 plan, so if you have children, if you have grandkids, I know 100% Pavlos has talked to you about implementing a 529 with your kids or your grandkids. So
Or
we are
left.
the ones that run that plan. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you, Pavlos, for your partnership, and to all the clients on the call today, thank you for your partnership as well. I couldn't do what I do without your help. Kevin's going to talk a little bit about some changes to 529 plans. But also, where you might see Principal come up in your statements is with our mid-cap portfolio. Principal mid-cap fund is in pretty much everybody's models, and that strategy has performed
Could have used
very
the
well so far this year,
microphone.
mainly due to we're looking at very high-quality businesses that
Okay.
are very insulated from changes in the economic environment, i.e.,
That's not in
tariffs have
problem.
been. Tariffs have been, obviously in the headlines for some time now. And so we're focused on high quality businesses with very strong moats and barriers to entry that are mostly US based. So about 75% of our holdings in the mid-cap fund have very limited tariff exposure. 25%, yeah, there will be some issues and we'll have some, rising costs with some of those companies being impacted by tariffs. But 75% of that portfolio, we feel like, are positioned better than their competitors when it comes to dealing with tariffs. So, Pavlos, thank you for keeping that strategy top of mind with your client portfolios. I really appreciate it. I'm going to introduce our speaker and share our screen on a few slides that We've seen the major provisions for the Big Beautiful Bill come through just about a month, I think almost exactly a month ago this past. And so we're going to introduce Kevin Hansen with Principal Asset Management. Kevin is a certified financial planner, and he works with a lot of our advisors and clients throughout the country, developing and delivering educational content on a broad range of financial planning content. He conducts many seminars for investors and provides education around Social Security, Medicare, education and 529 planning, advanced tax and distribution concepts, Secure Act, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, Big Beautiful Bill. He's been in the industry for about 33 years and has been a great partner to my business. So, Kevin, thank you for joining us. I'm going to share my screen on a few highlights from the Build Back Better bill, or sorry, Build Back Better. Big Beautiful Bill, BBB. It's easy to mix up. And you just direct me as to, where you'd like to go in terms of content to share. Oh, I'm sharing the wrong screen. I think 5 years since COVID would have this figured out by now. Oh. There we go. So Kevin, the mic is yours.
Okay, I'm not sure what's coming up on these slides, but if you want to advance past the starting one, we'll jump right in here. So thanks, Levin. Thanks, Pavlos, and everyone for joining. I've been in the business long enough to see a whole lot of change, and from a financial planning perspective, laws come and they get implemented, and then we get some new laws, and some things might get amended and changed. And I know there are a couple of CPAs on the line here. I think they would probably agree, as you look through this bill, there's a whole lot of content that's really probably focused on their world in terms of the conversations they're having with
$1,000 deduction for seniors with income less than $75,000.
If we could get muted lines on there at all, if you have the ability to mute your audio, that would be most helpful. Thanks so much. So from the standpoint of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, it's new. There are a lot of things that are really important to know from a planning perspective, as Pavlos mentioned. The biggest thing probably that we saw that changed from pre-signing to where we are currently is this idea that we don't have to experience a big tax increase. We don't have to see what could be a detrimental change in terms of the overall kind of economic conditions that come with tax increases or significant tax changes. So it made permanent. This bill made permanent the extensions from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. It's kind of business as usual there in terms of the income tax rates, which is good, which is an absolute net positive, at least from our perspective for long-term planning and the ability to kind of keep more of what we earn. Long-term capital gains rates are unchanged, which is a good thing. The standard deduction went up significantly back in 2017. There's going to be a permanence to that higher standard deduction. The standard deduction is bumping up a bit, I think, this year. And I think Teresa and Jim could comment on that, but I think it's 13.99 million in terms, or excuse me, I'm kind of jumping ahead to the income tax ability to not have to file a federal income tax form for gifting. So I'm jumping ahead to the gifting. So you can see from the slide here, the standard deduction bumped up with some annual increases that are coming beginning this year. It went from 13.99, I think, up to 15 million for that gift extension. There's a couple of things in there that are unique for the next 2 to 3 years, a number of things that are temporary. One of those is the 6,000 deduction for seniors. If you want to go ahead and jump forward there, Levin, I'll take a look at. So here's where we've got a couple of different changes to deductions and credits. The SALT deduction cap, state and local income tax that affects a lot of folks, that is bumping up from $10,000 up to 40 through 2028. There's going to be a phase out for people that have higher income. So you can see that phase out there above $500,000. The cap increases up to $40,400 beginning next year in 2026 and beyond. And then it looked to me like from the bill that that's going to revert back potentially in 2028. I think the CPAs in the audience can probably address that a little bit more when I conclude my comments. If you want to go ahead, Levin, and jump to the next slide. How many, and I'm not sure how many you have there, bud.
One more.
Okay, super. There we go. From an estate tax standpoint, the gift and exclusion that I was talking about that was 13.99, it's bumped up to 15 million per person for 2026. You can, you can gift more than that. You're going to have to pay income taxes in order to do that. There's an annual gift limit too of $19,000. That goes a lot toward the 529 kind of savings and incentives. The qualified opportunity zones, I think that's the blue zone stuff that was brought up earlier, made permanent beginning in 2027. And then the Trump accounts, these are kind of starter accounts that are really unique here for the next few years. From 2025 through 2028, the Treasury, the U.S. Treasury, is going to provide $1,000 of seed money for anyone who opens up this, what's being referred to as a Trump account. These are specifically for minors up to age 18. Contributions can go in the amount of $5,000. Companies can match these up to $2,500. And there are going to be some restrictions on them. Most of what I've seen with these compare and contrast the Trump accounts with 529 accounts and this idea that, we have a lot of different alternatives to save. In this case, if we're talking about Trump accounts, it's kind of a hybrid between a retirement account and what could certainly be used for a number of different savings expenses. The Trump accounts, as I mentioned, for 2025 through 2028, newborns have the ability to receive $1,000 of seed money into these, which is a great thing. It's free money and it's a jump start. I would view these more than anything as kind of this account where my child or grandchild would have the ability to have some money to give themselves a step ahead, I guess, when it comes to time for whether it's purchasing their first home, whether it's attending higher education, maybe it's starting a business. There are a number of different uses in there for that Trump account. Those restrictions and those uses, from what I can see, go away at the age of 30, but some limitations and some kind of phasing in of opportunities to take penalty-free distributions at that time. They're not going to be as advantageous as 529 accounts from a tax standpoint. The taxation on 529s is, as you may or may not know, a 529 is specific to education expenses, used to be specific to higher education expenses. There are some expanded uses within the new law. But from the standpoint of 529 versus a Trump account, I think it's certainly most of the evidence would suggest that if I'm saving for the most likely expense for my child or grandchild, and that's going to be higher education. Also, with the ability, with some flexibility that was built in to a previous bill, the Secure Act of 2023, you may not all be familiar with. The financial advisors on the line and Levin would be familiar with this, understanding that that one was a very financial services industry specific law. One of the things that that did from a planning perspective, and it kind of goes alongside the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, because 529s were affected with the One Big Beautiful Bill. Education savings, it used to be something where, hey, if my child or grandchild didn't use this money for what the government considers a qualified higher education expense, so think books, tuition, the most common expenses for higher education, those have been expanded. not only can you use 529s for K through 12 expenses, to K through 12 tuition, they've opened it up fairly significantly for additional expenses beyond just K through 12 tuition. So the law itself, there's a lot here. There are a lot of things that are probably going to come up in conversations when you meet with your CPA to do next year's taxes. And if you know, a number of these things may raise some questions for you that I've gone through already. I think what we see here is change that comes most every time we get a new administration, and a number of planning opportunities that, if we're not aware of them, we certainly wouldn't have the opportunity to take advantage of them. And with that, I'll take a pause here. Levin or anyone else on the line, if you have questions or comments or things to add, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I'll just say the passing of this bill just means increased opportunities for planning with your families and working with Pavlos in increased amounts. So definitely worth getting with him and talking about what's going to be affected within your financial situation, what won't be affected. And Pavlos has great resources like Kevin, like Teresa, like James to partner with. So we're here to help when we can. Pavlos, you are muted right now, but is there anything else you'd like to add to Kevin's comments?
On the case of the child accounts, what will they be called, and how will we be able to how will we be able to invest in it? And do we have to open those accounts before the end of the year?
They're called informally, they're called Trump
Trump
accounts.
accounts, right?
The industry is calling them Trump accounts. In terms of the funding, the first contribution, from what I can see, cannot come into those accounts prior to 12 months from the signing of the bill, which was the 4th of July. So it looks to me like, unless they make some announcement or some amendment to it, that the first contribution to those would not be able to be received until January 4th of 2026. There are a lot of other, I think, details to this that the IRS is going to need to shed some light on. You know, I've seen commentary within our financial services industry about, you know, the idea that, hey, who is going to open these? These are going to be starter accounts, contributory, small contributory accounts, the coordination of the $1,000 seed money with the U.S. Treasury. How is all that going to work? And I think, from at least from what I can see, this is not unlike most other bills that get signed, especially significant bills that take, sometimes it takes 12 months or more before we get clear guidance from the IRS in terms of kind of the operation of some of these rules and some of the language that we see in the bill. How do we really kind of operate? How do investors, what are investors to do in terms of those accounts? Because there are another restriction too is the actual investment. The intent here, from what I can see, is that the investment needs to go into an index, a stock index type of fund. And I think some of those restrictions come off maybe later down the road, but guidance needs to come from the IRS, I think, before we're going to get final answers on that type of question, kind of the nuts and bolts of it, if you will. I couldn't open one today. I couldn't go into my, you know, into your office or into a local bank, any place where I could open a small mutual fund index fund account and establish a Trump account. My understanding is that just opportunity doesn't exist yet, and that's due to some needed guidance from the IRS.
And Kevin, principal will have a solution for us, hopefully, right?
You know, I can't even answer that for sure. I would think, yeah, I would think the answer to that would be yes, Pavlos. Or if these are going to be a little bit more concentrated, maybe in, you know, local banks on the street corner or something like that. I don't know the answer to that just
Okay.
yet.
Pavlos, what do we say in our industry? There's no such thing as a free lunch. And while having a baby isn't free by any means, $1,000 helps, and I would consider this a free lunch from the government. So I'm expecting in a few months, and hopefully by then we'll have a lot more clarity on this.
Absolutely.
If anybody on the call has questions, right now most attendees are muted. You could go ahead and unmute yourself and ask a question if you'd like.
I have a question, and again, it's more toward Jim Vaughn and to Teresa Seitz. But can you talk a little bit about the SALT deduction and what that means? We are New Mexico residents and we have New Mexico state tax, but our state tax is like 5%. So, Kevin, maybe you can say how that would affect us because we live in a state that has state income tax and also state and local taxes.
That one was for me. I'm not sure I understood exactly.
So, as New Mexico residents, how does a SALT deduction help us?
Yeah, do you have a CPA on from New Mexico? I'm sorry.
Jim, you want to answer that maybe?
I can possibly answer that, but could you clarify just a little bit? You're asking about the SALT deduction.
Yeah, how does that help us then expanding the SALT deduction?
Well, in New Mexico, we don't. We often do not hit the $10,000 limit anyway. So this is primarily with your itemized deductions, is that we've been limited to $10,000. That would be the property tax and the state income tax. If you're in a high bracket, you have high income, then your state income tax can be pretty high. So we've been limited to $10,000 as a itemized deduction for the past several years. And this is now increased to 40,000. So your itemized, it may mean that you will itemize rather than take a standard deduction. That's how I think the thing would go. Teresa, do you agree?
Okay.
I agree, and they also added back in the mortgage insurance premiums, which will add to your itemized deductions.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So bottom line is clients need to look at their specific situation to determine which is better to itemize or to take the SALT deduction,
Yeah, that's correct. That's
depending
correct.
upon if they have a mortgage or what have you.
Yeah, some I think who have been limited have only done the standard deduction, and that's a good thing, frankly. Now they may have enough to do itemized deductions again because the SALT increase. That's the way I see it.
My next question, Jim, and I'll let you answer, but I'll ask Jim first. Explain about the tips and the overtime. How are we going to keep track of that? That's to be a nightmare, correct?
Do you want me to answer that? Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim. Go ahead, Teresa.
Well, the tips, the maximum annual deduction is 25,000, but basically on the tips and the overtime, that's going to be recorded on the W-2. They're going to issue us out new forms for that that is going to record that. So at the end of the year, as an employer, when you prepare those forms, it'll already be on there for the employee.
So, like if
Right.
somebody bartends on the side and they show that their tips were 10,000 for the year, then they will get that money back, whatever tax they paid on that money. They won't have to
Correct.
keep track of
But
that.
my understanding
They'll
that
just get a refund.
yes, then it's my understanding that that maximum deduction is 25,000, whether you're single or married, it's 25,000.
Okay.
And besides that, it has to be recorded on the form. And I think there's still some questions as there are in, like on the Trump and a lot of these things, there's still some questions how that will be done. But a self-employed person can take it who doesn't get a W-2, but it has to be recorded on some type of a form. There may be a form that we can fill out ourselves for that, but we don't know that answer yet. I think this will fall mostly to the payroll companies, honestly.
Correct.
I had a question about the senior deduction. I'm not quite sure I understand what that is and who's eligible for that.
Go ahead and identify yourself. I think I know
I'm
you.
sorry, this is Celine Dominguez.
Hey, Celine, go ahead, Celine. Can you ask
Yeah.
that, Jim?
So is that just an extra deduction, like your standard deduction, or and is there any parameters around that or restrictions?
So that deduction came about with when they say there's no more tax on Social Security. That's not true. What they did was come up with this deduction that's an additional 6,000 per person that's over 65. So a total of 12,000 if you're married. So that adds to that your standard deduction. Standard deduction, for example, let me get on here. A single person standard deduction, $15,750, plus you would add $2,000 because you're 65 or older, and then it would add another $6,000. So in combination, it would give you a deduction of $23,750.
And senior, the definition of senior here is 65 and older?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And Tracy, you're still on. We got to be careful about the RMDs. They're required, but it could throw somebody into a higher tax bracket or cause them not to be able to get their Social Security tax-free, correct?
Correct, because the phase-out is $75,000 for single and $150,000 for joint.
So maybe using like a Roth IRA for income needs might keep their Social Security from being tax correct if they use some of their income out of their Roth instead of their traditional IRA.
Correct. Well, the standard deduction and the new deductions that they give you for the seniors is supposed to negate some of that tax that they're paying on their Social Security.
So bottom line, income from the Roth IRA does not count, correct?
All income that you receive is subject to your Social Security being taxed.
Even money from a Roth IRA?
Yes, because that's income that you're bringing in.
Even if it's tax-free.
Is that correct, Jim? I believe so.
Is that correct, Jim?
Jim, is that correct?
Looks like Jim left the room, but he's coming back.
Yes, everybody is always thrown off by the income that makes your Social Security taxed.
Okay, what about tax-free income?
Tax-free income does not make your Social Security taxed. It's only income, which does correlate into your retirements and things like that, that actually is income that makes
your... What about capital gains?
That will make your Social Security taxed.
But you don't have capital gains on a Roth.
Jim, is Jim back?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm sorry. I spelled
my name. Hey, Jim, we're just asking about what income cap. If we're trying to make our Social Security tax-free, Teresa says municipal tax-free income doesn't count. Roth income does count, even though it's tax-free, and capital gains doesn't count, but dividend income does. Just want to make sure.
Well, in terms of the taxability of Social Security?
Correct.
Correct.
If I want to stay under the wire.
I don't believe that the RMD on the Roth income counts, but I can check that.
Okay. It does not. No, but
okay.
Any distribution from a Roth certainly would not count toward the potential taxation.
That's
of
being income.
Yeah. Right.
Then you'd want to be strategic working with Pavlos on should you be pulling money out of your Roth or your traditional IRA.
Right.
Bump up against those limits too much.
So the tax plan is going to be very important before the end of the year. How much money you take out? Because all of this goes into effect as of 2025, is that correct?
That is correct. So the other thing is, the one we're missing out on is the vehicle purchase. The vehicle purchase, tax-free car loan interest, I guess I should say, there's a maximum annual deduction of $10,000. And it has to be, and the deduction phases out if your income's single $100,000 or married filing jointly at $200,000. But you can deduct the interest from a new vehicle purchase. It has to be purchased after December 31st, 2024. Has to be new, and it has to be used for personal reasons, and it has to be secured by a lien, which basically means that you have to have a loan on that vehicle.
Does it have to be an American car?
It has to be final assembly, has to be done in America.
And there's only certain cars that would be that case.
So it should be
a Toyota car, but it would have to be a Toyota car that was assembled in America.
Yes, they're requiring that they list that on the MLS or on the, I'm sorry, on the car window, and or you can find it through the VIN. At the end of the day, when we file your taxes, you will have to bring your VIN number in here.
And the most you can deduct off your taxes if you have a business is how much?
It's this, the car purchase is not for businesses. It's for personal use.
Yeah.
What if it's for business?
Well, if it's we've been,
50%
yeah,
of
we've
your
been
budget.
able to take the business interest
Right.
In the past, so there's no change there.
So can you repeat that, Jim, a little louder?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Can you repeat what the advantages is about buying a vehicle before the end of the year if it's assembled in America?
Teresa.
Oh, it's a, so you get $10,000 of the interest that you can write up to, that's the maximum.
Yeah.
Your income for a single person cannot be over $100,000. If it's married and filing jointly, it cannot be over $200,000. And it has to be new, it has to be purchased after December 31st, 2024. And it has to have a loan on it.
And that's for somebody who's buying a car on interest. In other words, they're making payments, but not a lease. A lease does not count.
A lease does not count, no.
Now, next question, let me say the same question. If I purchase a car and I have a business and more than 50% of my car is using my business, how much can I write off before the end of the year if I have a business?
Well, you can write off your, it's an ordinary business expense, so you can write that
100%.
Interest. Yes. If you, assuming you have 100% use on the vehicle, 100% business use on the vehicle.
Would you say, Jim, that this would be a good year to buy an American car or an American assembled car if you have high income?
No. Well, this year or next year, I don't know. It depends on individual circumstances. I never feel that it's a good idea to just buy equipment, cars, anything, if you don't have a business reason for it. You don't buy it just for the tax reasons. But, you know, this is an advantage to buy an American car this year.
There is advantage. Or even if you're a younger person, to buy a car if you need it, and you'll be able to write off the interest.
Sure. If you need, you know, if you're wanting or need planning to buy a car, then this is going to be an extra little advantage for you. That's good.
Anything else, Jim, that y'all can think of on the big, beautiful bill? Because a lot of things haven't changed. They just extended the Trump tax law, and so our brackets remain the same. But is there any other like special advantages like enterprise zones or anything like that?
Sure. Do you want to cover business things now? Or
yes, go ahead. Teresa, is there anything else on
we have the extension of the 100% bonus depreciation. That's a huge thing for us, in that that's been limited. We in through 22 we were able to write off our full purchases of equipment, things with a 20-year life or yes or less. Then we've been, that percentage has been decreasing. Now it's been made permanent. We're able to write off, you buy a tractor, you can write that off.
What about like a kiln? What if you buy a kiln, like a ceramic kiln or something like that for your business?
Well, sure, if you're using it in business. Sure, if you're using it in business for your business percentage, usually 100% on things like that, then you're going to be able to write 100% off. That's a huge advantage for a small business, because they usually are paying, they're putting out funds, so they're putting at least a down payment, maybe the whole thing, and so now they're going to be able to write that part off. We had that law in the past. We've got had partial, but now as a for items purchased after January 19, 2025, those purchases we can write off 100%. So that's a huge thing on it. The Section 179 expense has been there. It's something that we still have. They've increased the limits, $2.5 million for each item, and the property threshold to $4 million. My own opinion is that we usually will take bonus depreciation rather than Section 179. Section 179 cannot let you go into a loss. Sometimes that's an important thing for us. There are various different rules on it, but I tend to like bonus depreciation better. Qualified production property. And this, I think, is a really big thing that might have been kind of overlooked, is that for companies that are in the manufacturing business, and use their business and their facilities in the manufacturing business, and this will include some agriculture. So, farmers, this is going to help you guys too. That we can take 100% deduction for facilities that are used in manufacturing. We can't use the part for office space or administrative or anything like that. It must be dedicated to the part dedicated to manufacturing. But this is really a good deduction for a small manufacturer, which we have in New Mexico. So I
What if you
recommend.
have like an art facility, like you make art, like you manufacture art,
Well, we
in a
don't,
building
we,
and you have.
yeah, Treasury is going to give us a listing of the industries that qualify. We don't have that exactly now. I don't know that art is going to qualify, but
What if it's
look.
metal art, metal art, metal whatever?
Yeah, I don't know, Pavlos. As I say,
That's kind
yeah,
of a gray area.
I'm not aware of those regulations being issued yet. Teresa, have you seen anything on
I have
that?
not.
No, I don't. I think we're still waiting. We're waiting on a lot of these things. But I'm thinking a traditional manufacturer is going to get a quite an advantage from this.
So this is a good year in 2025 to start a business if you've been thinking about it, especially if it's a manufacturing business.
That's right. And there are various restrictions on this property. So it can't have been used before for manufacturing. It can't, there are quite a few rules on it, rather, and I don't think
So
I'll go
basically,
through
they want you to
all of
buy a new piece of property and create a new manufacturing business.
them. That's right. Yeah.
But
So
there's a
I
lot of
think.
gray areas. You can do any type of thing like that. This year is going to be a good year to start a business, theoretically. Or what about if you have like a rental business or you have rental
That's
properties?
not,
It's not
yeah, that's
in,
not a manufacturing business,
right?
so.
But is there any advantages this year for any rental business if you have a like an Airbnb or something like that and you want to put it in an LLC or anything like that?
Well, an Airbnb would be, depending on your involvement, could be an active business, but I don't see a manufacturing aspect to that.
The rules are the same
You
for
get
like an
you
Airbnb,
get your
basically.
ordinary business expenses on that. Or your ordinary rental expenses. This thing, it depends on income, whether this is passive, whether it's active. A lot of factors that go into that. I don't see any changes, and Kevin and Teresa, I didn't see any changes related to the rental properties. Have you seen anything in this bill about that?
No.
No,
No,
I
I haven't either.
just if they buy a vehicle and they use the vehicle in their business and it's more than 50% of their business, theoretically.
Well, we have an extension or a little change in the domestic research and experimental. If you have R&D expenses, I think that's worth talking to your CPA about. We get a full write-off on those again. That's been one of those expenses that has come and gone
Or
for
if you're
us.
working on a patent, if you're making a patent on some type of procedure
Yeah,
or something like that.
that might be something that would qualify under
If
that.
you're working on some type of a patent for something or like
Well, or software development.
software
A
development.
lot of places, a lot of companies are doing some software development with the advancement of AI. People are doing a lot of their own stuff now,
We're not staying extra in the
venturing into
privacy.
that.
I'm glad you brought up the subject of AI. Anybody's interested in doing a meeting on AI, Bibu is awesome on that. Jim, maybe you need to help us or Teresa. But we use AI here in our office, and it's a great tool. I always say it's not your brain. You got to use your own intellect, but it's a great way of verifying something that you might think is correct. So I use it like for verification of certain procedures and things. And so Tyler is very familiar with AI as well. So if you guys would like us to do a Zoom meeting on AI, we can definitely do that because we do think it could help you in your everyday activities, even if you're retired.
It's always important for us, right? We use it in our office. I think we could use it more, and we're all learning about those things. But
And Teresa, do you use AI as well?
We do, yes.
Excellent. And I can say that with using a CPA like Jim or Teresa or even having Kevin and Principal with us, AI is not the replacement for intellect. It is a tool that can kind of, I would say, whittle things down and make things a little bit easier and more simple to understand. But you still have to use your own intellect and judgment. AI is not, does not give you judgment. And that's what we have, Jim, a CPA, and of course, our
We find it very good, very helpful to check things out, to be sure we're giving the right advice, you know, all of those kinds of things. Drafting.
It makes our jobs easier and more efficient.
I'm sorry?
It makes our jobs easier and more efficient.
Yes, it does.
But it's not a replacement for intellect.
Pablo, so I'll remind everybody on the line, if you have any questions for us, feel free to unmute yourself.
I would say that the other thing they brought back was the moving expenses. A lot of people always ask for those, and they got rid of those in 2018, but now they're back.
And what is a moving expense, Teresa?
A moving expense is if you relocate because of your job or opening a business, then you get to deduct those from your tax returns.
Any changes to inheritance taxes or estate taxes?
I think Kevin mentioned, maybe Kevin could feel that, but he mentioned the increase on the exemption amount. Is there something else, Kevin?
And basically, I would say that it increased to 19,000. You can gift anybody 19,000, but for most everybody on this phone call, we don't need to worry about inheritance tax because we're all under, most everybody is under 15 million. Is that correct, Jim?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me make a little point here to go back to the Trump accounts, maybe, because I was looking at business part on that. A business can put $2,500 for an employee's child into a Trump account. Now, granted, we don't have that. They're not set up yet. We don't have them yet. But when that comes, then a business set. However, this is going to be considered a gift. And so any contribution, I think, to a Trump account is going to be considered, well, that at least is going to be a gift. It's not going to be deductible by the business as an expense. It's going to be a gift to the person's child. So when we start talking about gifts, that can impact your filing requirement for a gift tax return, if that's helpful to the question.
Did I explain that about the changes of inheritance? Did everybody get that? Did they understand that?
No.
There's not an inheritance tax specific to the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, but from an estate planning standpoint, the kind of the thresholds that they have for federal estate tax are permanent, and they've bumped up. They call it the gift estate and generation skipping transfer tax. It's bumped up to $15 million for starting next year in 2026. And then it's going to also be indexed for inflation. So if we're in an inflationary environment, you'll see that $15 million tick up according to an index from year to year potentially. And then it's made permanent. So they haven't kind of had a permanence to these. Again, the word permanent, you know, that can change too with the next when the next Congress repeals it. But so the exemption for the federal estate and the gift tax this year is 13.99 million technically per person, and that was going to be cut in half starting next year, down to about 7 or 7.5 million. So again, certainly a positive. And then flowing down from that is what we talked about, the $19,000 per year gift tax exclusion, the annual exclusion. You can gift more than that to one beneficiary, but if you do, you're going to have to file a federal gift tax return, as Jim mentioned.
And included in that gift would be any $2,500 thing that your employer would have.
If you're contributing to somebody else's account, you're absolutely right. That's going to be counted as a gift, and that can accumulate up to the $19,000 per year for that particular individual before you'd have to fret about filing a gift tax return.
And keep in mind, you can gift to any person at $19,000. So you as a individual, you could gift to your son, your daughter-in-law, or son-in-law, or any of your grandkids. And if you're husband and wife, you can both do that, which means that would be 19,000 times
38,
two, which would be 38,000.
You got it.
That could be used for a down payment on a house.
It can be used for anything.
Yeah.
It's one, if it's gifted, the recipient can use it for anything.
Right. And also increases the amount that you put in your 529. You still can put 5 years up front in your 529. That's 19,000 if it's rent parents or parents. That's 19,000 times two. That's 38,000. Kevin, if I'm not mistaken, that's 5 years in advance. You could do 38,000 times five, which now increases it to 190,000 in 1 year.
For a household, for a married couple. Yeah, you got it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For a married couple. Again, what we're trying to tell clients is if you can shift some of your assets to your kids or grandkids. I have a client, a very nice client of mine, said the best thing he ever did was tell my parents to give me money to put a down payment on my house. And I was able to get in the house with a low interest rate a few years ago. And you told my parents to tie a mortgage around my neck. And that worked out really well. So if you want to tie a mortgage around your beneficiary's necks, gifting them money for a down payment is a great strategy.
There you go.
Pavlos, this is Arlene.
Hey, Arlene, how are you?
Good, how are you? I took notes, and first question is, you're recording this, and can I go back into the recording to listen to this all over again?
We can.
Okay, because I do have questions.
What was your question? Go ahead and ask your question, because some people may have the same question.
Well, I have, questions on the 529. I have two of them. I have two grandchildren. And I wrote down that the 529 is only for education purposes. For example, K-12 tuitions and only tuitions. Okay, that is if they're going to go to a private school, then, but it includes kindergarten. Because my grandson is in a preschool, but it's not kindergarten. So if they continue to put him in a school, the tuition, this 529 can pay for it.
And let me ask also a question. I'll add to that question. What about buying them a laptop or a computer when they're in under college grade, can they write that to 529? I'll have either Kevin or Jim or whoever answer that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Big Beautiful Bill Act expanded the use for K-12 to the question there. It's goes beyond just tuition for K-12.
Yeah.
So books and books.
I wrote down books. Okay, so it goes beyond. So K-12 and then
books
higher
instruction.
So it's only for education.
Yes, effectively things that kind of come back to education. So beyond just the tuition, online educational materials, tutoring, fees for tests like SAT, ACT tests, educational therapy for students that have disabilities, like occupational therapy, for example. So there are lists like that, but it's still, there's still restrictions. It isn't, I couldn't use it for food for, my college age child. I mean, there are a lot of restrictions.
What about a laptop or a computer?
Yeah, that would be a book or instructional material. That would count. Yep.
But Kevin, also keep in mind,
you get your grandkids for Christmas. There you go.
And Kevin, the reporting on that, to qualify, you need to keep receipts. You need to document that when you file your taxes to get that deduction, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I think anytime you're going to take a deduction like that, or consider that in your tax profile, you want to keep the receipts in case you suffer an audit. So yes.
Correct.
Yes, making sure that you have a good CPA to help you, like Teresa and Jim, will give you comfort in making sure that you're making the right decisions and the tax deductions.
Yeah.
Again, what I'm trying to stress to clients is it's about tax avoidance or tax minimization. And so we are now one of the lowest tax countries in the world, and that really benefits people, especially if they want to start a business. This is a great opportunity for, and I don't know if Jim and Teresa will chime in, but if young people want to start a business or have a family, this bill, it benefits young families wanting to have children, and it benefits young people who wanting to start a business, especially manufacturing.
I think that does. Teresa probably might want to chime in on some of those childcare things.
You want to chime in, Teresa?
Yeah, I mean, they increased the child tax credit, but as we're waiting to see what the return is on that, for example, last year, child tax credit was $2,000, but the refundable credit was $1,700. This year, it's $2,200 for children under the age of 17. We always have expense for child and dependent care. What else? And then the standard deduction has increased. Standard deduction has increased from last year for most people around $2,000, a little bit less than $2,000. So last year it was $29,000 for married filing joint. This year it's $31,500. So, you know, we're seeing the increase in that, which is helping everybody. Your itemized deduction actually has to be larger than that. They did decrease the write-off for gambling expenses. Gambling expenses used to be the same amount of what you earn, what you actually gambled away, but now it's 90%. I think that's
Teresa,
pretty.
Are there, for the child deduction of 2,000 or 3,000, are there income restrictions? Asking for a friend.
Child tax deduction? No, there's not an income restriction on there. Great. There's just a restriction which we don't know. Most of these, I believe it's October 2nd that they said they were going to come out with some of these guidelines of what is refundable or whatnot.
Great.
This is Kathy Vogt. I had heard that there was a change in who can deduct the child support, the child deduction. If you're paying child support, are you the one that can deduct? Take the child deduction.
Can you repeat that question for us, Jim or Teresa?
Yes, I had heard that if you are the person who is paying child support, you are the one that you can now take the child deduction on your taxes. Has that changed under the Big Beautiful Bill?
I don't believe so.
That is
always a court issue. And as far as the IRS goes, the IRS could care less if your court order said that you can claim them or not claim them. If it came to the IRS issue, the IRS is going to choose the higher income earner because that's who they're going to pay back less. But as far as you having a court order, obviously it's in your favor to pay those taxes or no, I'm sorry, to get that deduction.
So basically both parents cannot take a deduction. But the one that makes a higher income, the IRS favors them because they would get a bigger deduction. Okay.
That's because, no, they favor them because the IRS is going to pay them back less.
Right.
There is one thing about, one other thing about children that might be interesting to some people is that the adoption credit, now up to $5,000 of that will be refundable. It's not been refundable in the past. So if you're, you know, adoptions are pretty expensive. And so, you know, that would be a benefit there. I think there's one or two other things, Pavlos, if I could move on.
Yes, please, Jim.
For a minute, we have a little change to business meals in for employer-provided facilities or meals that you can't just take the deduction. You have to be charging the employee full price for that meal, and then you can take 100% of the cost. That's a little change that won't affect too many, but it does some opportunity zones extended, made permanent. They will reevaluate and redesignate some opportunity zones every 10 years. And I think that's, we have people who have wanted to defer their capital gains. Been a good, that's been a pretty good program, I think. Section 1202, if you're selling a business, there's some change to, we have some advantage to, and we don't have to hold it as long as we had before. I think farmers have gotten some advantage from this bill. Capital gain tax from sale of qualified farmland can be spread out over four periods, four equal installments now. That's kind of good. And credits. Our energy credits are basically gone mostly after September 30 or December 31. One goes to next year, but our solar credits are gone. I know that you had a question come in about that. And my understanding is that the property must be placed in service. Is that your, Teresa? I don't think you can just put a down payment on it. I think it actually has to be working.
That's correct. It has to be placed.
Yeah.
And they have until December 31st to make sure the solar panels are working or whatever and actually creating electricity.
Yeah, the vehicle credits are pretty well out September 30th. Mm-hmm. The home credits December 31st. Yeah. So I think those were the things that I've kind
Teresa,
of wanted
is there
to
anything talk. You want to add or any more questions? We got a few more minutes. Anybody have any other questions? Teresa, you want to add anything?
I'm just looking over my notes here. Mm-hmm. I think we pretty much covered everything.
What is the advantage, just real quick? What if somebody wants to buy an electric car before September 30th, and of course they want to get a more loan on that electric car, and they get a great deal on electric car? What is the deduction on electric car before September 30th, just if somebody wants an electric car?
There's no deduction for an individual on a car. There's only the loan interest thing, but there's no other. Well, the solar, the credits, the energy credits could be there. It's going to depend on the price of the car.
What about for an electric car? Is that still available?
Only in the state of New Mexico, I think, or certain states right. Still have an electric credit.
What is New Mexico's electric credit?
New Mexico's electric credit, I believe, is $1,000.
$1,000, just off your state tax.
And it depends on the vehicle. A lot of people, I think, bought the Tesla truck, and then they didn't get the credit. It has to be under $75,000, I believe.
It has to be under $75,000.
Yeah.
It can't be one of those big, huge Tesla cars. Trucks, right. Because they won't get the deduction for that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we're running, we're about 3 minutes early. We're going to still ask, is there anybody have any questions? You can even put it in the chat. If you have a question, just put it in the chat and we can respond to that. Also, anybody that's interested in learning more about AI, send us a message and we'll set up a time that works for everybody for us to do a session with Bibu and also with Tyler on how AI can help you, and we can help you set it up on your computer if you want to use AI. Very interesting thing about AI, it generates and uses a lot of electricity. There are companies like Tesla that are hooking directly up to the natural gas pipeline to generate electricity, and also Three Mile Island, Bill Gates is going to hook up directly the nuclear power plant at Three Mile Island to generate enough electricity for his Microsoft's AI program. So AI is going to be a huge opportunity, maybe not for intelligence, but for energy use, because the energy use that we're going to have in this country is going to go through the roof because AI generates a lot of energy. I was in Australia recently, and they're talking about building a solar panel in the Northern Territory, which is probably going to be the size of like Rhode Island, and they're going to generate enough electricity to help power Singapore. They're going to be putting cables to Singapore to generate enough power to power what the AI needs of Singapore is. So it's going to be a big issue, energy and being able to generate enough power. And of course, commodities like copper, lead, silver, all those go into creating infrastructure for electricity and energy. With that, any more questions? Thank you, everybody, for being able to get on this call. Thank you to Alexandra, Lexi for setting this up, and also for Tyler for doing all the work and getting everybody on there. If you like this meeting, please give us your input. If there's some things you think we can do better, please let us know so we can improve these topical Zoom meetings. And again, if you want to have a special separate meeting, please let us know. We can either do it by Zoom if it's more convenient, or in person. And we have definitely times that we can set up for each individual on this call to talk about the big, beautiful bill and how we can take advantage of the most important tax deductions for you before the end of the year. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Kathy, for your nice comment. And hope everybody has a great day. And again, we appreciate your business, and we appreciate all of our employees and all the good work that we do. Thank you, Jim Vaughn, and thank you, Kevin, and thank you, thank you for Tyler setting this up, also for Lev for putting this together for us as well in such a short notice, and thank you to Teresa Seiss. So again, if you have any questions for them, we can route the questions. Again, thank you, everybody, for being on today, and we will see you guys at the next Zoom meeting.
Securities offered through Cetera Wealth Services LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cetera Investment Advisors LLC, a registered investment advisor. Cetera firms are under separate ownership from any other named entity. Kevin Hansen, Levin Wilson, Teresa M. Seiss, and Jim Vaughn are not affiliated or registered with Cetera Wealth Services LLC. Any information provided by these individuals is in no way related to Cetera Wealth Services LLC or its registered representatives. Distributions from traditional IRAs and employer-sponsored retirement plans are taxed as ordinary income and, if taken prior to reaching the age 59 and a half, may be subject to an additional 10% IRS tax penalty. A Roth IRA offers tax-free withdrawals on taxable contributions. To qualify for the tax-free and penalty-free withdrawal of earnings, a Roth IRA must be in place for at least 5 tax years, and the distribution must take place after age 59 and a half or due to death, disability, or a first-time home purchase, up to a $10,000 lifetime maximum. Depending on state law, Roth IRA distributions may be subject to state taxes. Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses associated with municipal fund securities before investing. This information is found in the issuer's official statement and should be read carefully before investing. Investors should also consider whether the investor's or beneficiary's home state offers any state tax or other benefits available only from that state's 529 plan. Any state-based benefit should be one of many appropriately weighted factors in making an investment decision. The investor should consult their financial or tax advisor before investing in any state 529 plan. Pavlos Panagopoulos, certified financial planner and accredited investment fiduciary, registered associated Cetera branch offices are located at 11,000 Spain Road Northeast, Albuquerque, New Mexico 87111, and 511 Rankin Avenue, Belen, New Mexico 87002.